morning. The night had been a rough one, and heaps of sleeping bodies filled both the floor and the alcoves. The smell wasn't as bad as the cellar, a mixture of mostly spilled beer or ale. Beams of light speared through shuttered windows, tethering dead ends to the wooden floor. Snores rumbled, undisturbed by the wooden footsteps of the six entering the alehouse. Even the old barkeep slept, his head in his arms behind the counter. Lantus glanced about and noted every sleeping patron in the cavernous interior. They were sleeping, but he had been trained not to take chances. It wasn't his fault they were here, and he had to ensure no one saw their faces. Curlin looked at him. Not easy to look upon at any time, and right now appearing quite evil. Lantus's fingers flexed on his sword's hilt. Kill them all. Quietly. The men broke away from their leader, eager to please. In his bed, Mullock smacked his lips and cracked an eye. Like a bird taken to wing, sleep wouldn't return to him, and for that he cursed Gol in his native tongue. He lay there, staring up at the ceiling, and just listened, eyes closed, feeling the air flow in and out of his body. Breakfast. Too damn early for breakfast. Irk. Wook. Clack. The sounds made him frown as they drifted from downstairs. They reminded him of a throat being cut, or a head being smashed. He thought it strange to hear any noise this time of the morning. Then a silence fell, deep and unsettling, in which he waited expectantly for the next soft note, but heard nothing. Mullock scoffed, and figured it was probably a few drunks stumbling off tables in their haste to get to a latrine. With that, he sniffed deeply, wrinkled his nose up, and rolled onto his side. He wondered absently if the lads might bring him back something to eat. Another sniff, then a rub at his nose. Once again, he tried summoning sleep. The street meandered quite a distance away from the alehouse, and Harm and Gol followed it until they came to a stall occupied by an old woman in a thin yellow dress. She sat behind a bare stone grill situated against the wall of a store with its shutters closed. Her sun-ravaged features questioned the two men. "You have food here?" Gol asked.
"I do," she crackled back. "You lads speak funny. Where are you from?"
They stopped before the stall. "I'm from Cree, and this one's a Jiberian." She watched Harm warily, careful not to meet his eyes. It caused him to chuckle.
"I'll not do anything wrong, good woman," he said pleasantly. "My companion and I just want to eat."
Still on guard, she puttered about her stone grill and produced a large iron frying pan.
"Can you pay?" she asked.
Gol held up a single gold coin. The sun caught the metal just so and made it twinkle. No longer shy, the old woman got cooking. The smell of blood soured the air and covered the floor in thick, ever-widening gobs. Some of it drained to the earth below through knots and seams in the wooden planks, while the rest simply flowed with all the grace of slow-moving ice. Lantus dropped the head of the barkeep, angling it so the gash from his cut throat would not spatter his boots. It wasn't that he worried about getting blood on himself, but he realized he'd have to step out into daylight once again, and probably have to leave the city with haste. Even fresh blood was difficult to clean off, but he hated when it became sticky. They'd made quick work of the people sleeping in the alehouse. The barkeep himself was a simple haul and gash, barely a hitch, except for the unsettling hissing a person makes when their gullet's been sliced open. Even with the grunts and breaking of bones, most of the patrons barely stirred in their drunken slumbers. Lantus decided he didn't mind the lack of a challenge.
"Come on," he whispered, motioning the others to follow him towards the stairs.
They pulled themselves away from their individual acts of butchery, leaving the tavern floor and nearby alcoves with still bleeding corpses. Blood coated the hands and leather of some and covered all of their blades. Golki held his diamond-shaped maces before him, bringing up the rear and shaking one iron head at the wall. A tattered piece of red scalp splashed against the wood and slunk in spurts to the floor. Lantus went up the stairs, eyes set on the three doors at the top, taking two at a time. He froze at a wooden squeal behind and turned about to see Curlin,
snarling as if he'd just stepped into a steaming cow kiss. That one piercing squeal of wood, as sharp-sounding as one of Gol's sleep farts, spiked the silence and made Mullock open his eyes again. Like it or not, he was quickly waking to the shrill murmurs of what almost sounded like bird calls. It took him a moment more to realize the sound was the stairs. People were coming up, their boots softly clomping off wood. Mullock squinted in the room full of shadows, leaned over the edge of the bed and spied the dark lump of the coin sack peeking out from underneath. Gol, he thought, didn't bring enough coin. He sighed in weary wonder. Dying sudden, Lantus thought. He hoped he had killed the carpenter of those stairs below. If he spied one of the dead bodies with a hammer or any other tool on the way back down, he'd make it a point to stab the topper again. He reached the walkway and waved his men up and past him. Morgan Sulo grinned with anticipation as they passed. Golki lifted his twin maces. Placus hefted his battle axe. Six men lined the walkway, two at each door. They readied themselves to kick in the doors and charge. All eyes latched onto Lantus, who crouched behind Placus. Lantus raised his hand and dropped it. Chapter 38. The soft rattling outside his door continued until Mullock sat up, a hand to his forehead. Gol had apparently paused outside the door, and squinting at the line of light at the base seam, Mullock could see that Harm was there as well. The pair was trying hard to be quiet. Then the door flew open. Two men barged into the room, gleaming short swords out, and took a second to spot where the Cree was sleeping. Mullock jerked himself over the side of the bed, suddenly very much awake. The killers charged him, shouting, and Mullock did the only thing he could. He threw his blanket. The blanket covered one man's upper torso, and he thrashed to be free of it. Mullock faced the second man, who rushed around the expanse of the bed. He swung his sword at the naked Cree, who slept without a stitch on, and missed the top of his head by a hair. Mullock sprang at him, grabbed him up in a bear hug, and, with whatever strength he possessed, squeezed about his midsection. A gasp of surprise and pain burst from his victim's lungs. "To Morgan Sulo!" Mullock heard from outside, and panic rose in his gullet. He threw his attacker into the other, already freed of the blanket, and slammed both of them into the wall, where they stumbled to the floor. Naked and unarmed, Mullock ran at the door, just as a man appeared there with a pair of heavy maces. Golki's face twisted up in anger, and swung a mace an instant before Mullock crashed into him. The mace swept the killer arc over his head, splintering a chunk of doorframe, as Mullock forced him backwards onto the walkway. A man with a fearsome battle axe flashed by, but Mullock could pay him little mind. He and Golki crashed through the wooden railing and fell roaring onto the bar below. Golki landed on his back, with a solid slap of flesh on wood, still holding his weapons and with Mullock on top of him. The impact was enough to jar the Cree for a moment, but then he regained his wits. He looked up in time to see the brute with the battle axe about to leap. With a huff, he scrambled off the motionless body and the bar, and onto his feet, landing barefoot in blood and nearly losing his balance. Mullock glanced down, too energized to feel horror at the mess coating the tavern floor, and fleetingly took in the dead bodies. He grabbed one of the maces from the slow-moving Golki, who did nothing to stop him.
"Kill him, Placus!"
another yelled out. Two more men were racing down the stairs. Above him, Placus jumped. He landed through the section of the countertop, up to his knees, his face a shocked rictus of pain. The battle axe slipped from his fingers as he doubled over, as if bowing to royalty. Mace in hand, Mullock raced to the stairs to head off the two descending men. They met at the bottom, and a ferocious monster of a man swung a sword at his head. The mace wasn't the choice weapon of the Cree, but he wielded it like a heavy blade. He blocked the sword and knocked the lead man off balance with a countering two-handed swipe, flinging him out of the way and into the gore-covered floor. The second man slashed at Mullock's stomach, drawing a line that spat blood. Mullock sprang back, noting the two men he'd thrown into the wall of his room, now charging down the steps two at a time. The Cree lashed out with the mace. His foe ducked to one side, escaping the scything arc of the heavy weapon. Mullock crashed into him and heaved him into the descending men. All three attackers dropped to their knees, hands grasping at wood to halt their falls, giving Mullock a few more seconds. The first swordsman pulled himself up from the blood on the tavern floor, snarled and attacked. He slashed right and then left, and finally stabbed. Mullock evaded both attacks and smashed the sword to the floor before stepping in close and uppercutting with his mace. The weapon crushed his foe's jaw, cracking his head back in a spurt of broken teeth and dropping him to the floor.
"I'll gut you!"
someone shouted from behind. Mullock whirled about to face the first man to untangle himself from the clutter of limbs on the stairs. He drew back his sword for an over-the-shoulder chop. The Cree deflected the swipe with his mace and parried another, and for a moment the pair stood toe-to-toe exchanging heavy blows. The sword finally punched through Mullock's guard and flashed across his lower ribs, parting flesh. Mullock retreated, backing towards the bar and eyeing the remaining killers, who were rising from the stairs, recovered and angry.
"You think that stings?"
Curlin hissed with a grin behind his guard, nodding at Mullock's bleeding wound.
"I'll make you sing."
He lunged at the Cree. Harm smelled the toasting bread and smiled. Perhaps an early rise wasn't a bad idea at all. He sipped on a cup of water while Goal eyed a pot full of boiling eggs next to the bread.
"This?"
the old lady said, her bottom lip hanging as she pointed at a jar.
"Is honey butter. Very good. Made just this week."
"Honey butter?" Goal asked.
"Yes, and this?"
She brought up another jar and attempted to open it. Harm reached out, but she drew back with a shake of her hand. With a little grunt, she opened the jar.
"This is red berry jam. Very sweet."
The jam intrigued the Jiberian. He had a taste for sugary things. "How much longer for the eggs?" Goal asked.
"I just put them to boil. Are you in a hurry?"
the woman asked him. The Cree shrugged.
"Not really."
Lantus held his wrecked jaw and crawled along the floor. Golki moved weakly on the countertop like a shellless turtle on its back, writhing pitifully, attempting to turn over, while Placus, in obvious pain, bent over at the waist where he had crashed through the wood, his battle axe on the floor. Mullock and Curlin savagely exchanged blows, sword and mace clanging. Mullock then twisted away from the counter, weaving between the heavy tables and benches to throw off his opponent.
"Morg! Sulo! Go around!"
Curlin cried as he navigated the obstructions. Mullock changed course and retreated back around the corner of the bar, leaving bloody footprints in his wake.
"He's a slippery one, Curlin!"
Morg shouted, grinning and seemingly enjoying the hunt. The naked Cree got behind a table and shoved it towards Sulo, slowing him. Mullock then faced the two men rushing towards him. He circled Morg's flank, placing the killer between Curlin and himself. Curlin cursed and opted to climb onto a table to go around his companion. Morg stabbed from Mullock's gut. The Cree parried it and burst his opponent's nose with a counterpunch. He changed targets and crashed his mace into a stunned Morg's chest, driving him backwards and causing him to stumble over a bench. Curlin jumped from table to table, moved in, and slashed downwards, missing the naked man's head narrowly, but cutting a sliver of flesh from the outer curve of his right shoulder. The Cree cried out, the force of the blow causing him to slip. He fell to his knees, and as he went, he grabbed Curlin's ankle and yanked him off his feet, landing him flat on his back. Then Mullock scuttled on hands and knees under a table. Sulo maneuvered around the bodies just as Mullock sprang out from underneath a thick slab of polished wood. He slashed downwards at the naked man, cutting a shallow line down his bare back. Mullock bolted for the far wall where he righted himself just in time to see Sulo pursuing. Mullock dropped to a knee and threw the mace with both arms. The weapon bounced off Sulo's unprotected shins and sent him crashing down between tables, just as a nearby Golki, still on the bar, flipped himself onto his belly. Mullock drove a fist into the piggish face, snapping the man's head to the left and dropping him once more.
Wasting no further time on him, Malek bent over and grabbed the other mace. A wounded Sulo struggled to his knees just as Malek crushed his skull with a clack and a fleshy splash, the impact toppling the killer against a table. Grunting, Malek backed up and looked at his shoulder. Meat, red and raw, oozed distressing streams of blood down his flesh. He could still work the arm, but it stung to Saman's hell. Across from him, both Morg and Curlin got to their feet.
"That's one," Malek breathed, glaring at them both.
He hefted the mace with two hands and shifted his weight from foot to foot.
"No one's coming to save you,"
Curlin growled, raising his short sword. Morg extracted a dagger for his off hand and circled to his right. Malek bared teeth.
"Are you?"
"Kill him!"
screeched a red-faced Placus, still transfixed by the shards of the countertop, the cords in his neck protruding. Near him, Gulki struggled to rise again. On some unheard signal, Curlin, Morg, and Malek flung themselves at each other. For a moment, blades seemingly stitched together as the three traded blows. Malek stopped one sword, and then another, purely on the defensive and maneuvering to place one man between himself and the other. He parried Curlin's sword to the floor and uppercut with his mace, letting it fly to crunch into Morg's jaw and halting him in mid-attack. The man flopped to the floor as Curlin righted himself. Malek swarmed him, throwing his arms about the other's torso, and both fell heavily over a table, suddenly wrestling for Curlin's sword. They landed on bloody floorboards with Curlin on top. Malek punched upwards, missed, and grabbed for a wrist, frantic not to give his adversary a chance to stab downwards. Curlin roared, his face blazing red, and forced the sword down, using his body weight to push the tip of the blade towards the other's contorted face. Malek abruptly gave up resisting and whipped his head to the right. The blade sliced down and grazed his hairy head, embedding itself in the wooden floor. Curlin's eyes widened as Malek heaved with his hips, throwing the other off balance and into a table. Malek struggled to his feet and noted the blood spattering his left arm. A moment later, he heard ringing in his ear. That hesitation was all Curlin needed. His face contorted in hatred as he extracted a dagger from a boot and charged. He stabbed for Malek's gut, and the Kree caught the arm as it thrust forward. The tip of the blade pierced Malek's gut, and Curlin dragged it to one side, drawing a dollop of blood across the floor. Malek rammed his shoulder into the man's nose, bursting it like a water bag and making him cringe in pain. The killer still had enough strength to shove Malek back. The Kree stumbled three steps and collided with a table. He threw his arms out to right himself, his left hand slapping the wooden surface, when an unsteady Lantus rose up behind him, wrecked jaw hanging hideously, and hacked downwards with the battle axe he had picked up from the floor, lopping off three fingers of Malek's left hand and burying the blade in the table, the underside splintering. Malek screamed in pain. A livid Lantus screamed back. Malek twisted about and grabbed him by his wrecked mouth, dug his feet in, and pulled the man forward. Howling in pain, Lantus could not resist, and collided with the table's edge a split second before a raving Malek crashed an elbow into the back of his head, driving him down onto the wood face first with a crunch. Knotting up a fistful of hair, Malek yanked the man's neck to the battle-axe edge, not fully buried into wood, and soared with every ounce of energy remaining. The steel licked bare flesh in rapid jerks. Blood spurted. Lantus sagged. That left only three. Curlin razored a new line down Malek's back with his sword, taking him from his left shoulder down into the meat of his left buttock. Malek roared and released the head in his grasp. He whirled about in pain, backed up, and crashed into the bar where Placus, still impaled in the wood, grabbed him about the neck and squeezed. Curlin's eyes lit up as he charged, intent on plunging his short sword through Malek's chest. Malek kicked, his bare foot snapping into the face of the man and crumpling him with a whimper. Placus growled in agony and rage in Malek's ear, struggling to get a better grip on his neck. Malek drove an elbow into his captor's gut and twisted around, his own blood slicking his neck and preventing Placus from establishing a firm hold. He pushed away from the wounded man, breaking the hold. Placus roared. Malek gathered up a fallen short sword, his chest heaving, his back scalding, and his limbs aching. He eyed Gulki, flopping off the bar and staggering towards the alehouse entrance, the first man to attempt escape. Placus roared again, writhing savagely as he righted himself, attracting attention. Mullock slashed open the trapped man's throat and left him gurgling. Placus's face paled almost immediately. The dying killer clawed at the gruesome cut with red fingers before finally collapsing, slumping over the front of the bar. Chest heaving, Mullock turned around and saw Curlin struggle to his knees, an arm on a nearby table, a dagger in his right hand.
You?
The killer breathed. With an overhand chop, Mullock split Curlin's head open to a cheek, where he left the weapon. He didn't have the energy to pry it out, his own blood loss weakening him almost to the point of collapse. A door clattered open as Gulki stumbled through, allowing a wide beam of sunlight into the alehouse. The man disappeared outside, and Mullock groaned. Filling his lungs, he hurried through the bodies and blood, pushing himself well past his limits. He snatched up a dagger, dark with gore, and staggered out the door in pursuit. A fist smashed him across the face, breaking his cheek and driving him to the flagstones. Mullock hit hard and rolled, still possessing enough sense to instinctively keep moving. Gulki growled something beast-like from above, and then Mullock felt the man's weight crash down on him. He squirmed, disoriented, and got a hold of an arm. Gulki stabbed with his dagger, cutting Mullock under his arm, across his ribs. The Krieg grimaced, twisted, rolled the bigger man to the road and got on top. Gulki squealed and cut the outside of Mullock's thigh, the burn of the steel bright enough to make him dizzy. Gulki kept on cutting, sawing, each frenzied slash going a little deeper into the muscle. With a final, furious scream, the Kree rammed the knee into the weapon arm of his foe, pinning it to the road, just before jamming his near-fingerless slab of a hand into the killer's face. Mullock fended off, desperate fingers clawing for his eyes, and heard the garbled screech beneath him before angling the dagger in his right fist towards the man's face, and stabbed. There was a sick crunch, and a sudden spasm where Mullock was almost bucked from his would-be killer. Then the body slumped beneath him. Mullock gazed down and was too tired to do anything but gape. He eventually rolled off the dead man, who had been stabbed through the center of his face, hard enough that the crossguard of the dagger pinched into an eye and the corner of his mouth. Mullock tried to rise, but his legs wouldn't work. He looked down at his naked, bleeding self and saw the mess of his frame. Cuts laced his body and were only just beginning to send out one mighty crescendo of pain. He tried scratching at his nose, only to flutter the bloody stumps of his fingers before his eyes. Then his world tilted. Along the street, the world awakened with hard claps of wood banging off wood. Blurry figures, ghosts shimmering in the daylight, streamed into the road to the left and right of him. They surrounded him, seeping inwards at the edges of his darkening vision. He sat and waited, legs splayed out before him, the pain rushing in with tidal force. A little wheeze left him then, signaling the last of his strength. Someone grabbed his shoulder, turning him to the right. The sun flashed off metal skin, and two eyes that blazed.
"Who are you?"
a voice demanded. Mullock blinked, took the barest of breaths.
"I'm the..."
He paused. Blackness foamed over him then, full of black motes, sparkling like evil suns, and he tumbled below its surface. Chapter 39 The crowds choked the street in front of the alehouse, making it nearly impossible for Gol and Harm to get any closer to the place. The pair exchanged puzzled looks before Harm took the lead in parting the people, sliding towards the drinking establishment. Harm stopped before a line of scars in full battle dress, cordoning off an area where their corps officers stood studying a dead man lying in the street. Blood stained the street stones, and the pit fighter's confusion turned to concern.
"What happened here?" Gol asked of a man nearby.
"Big fight this morning."
"What? Who?"
"Don't know.
There was one barely alive. They carried him off to a healer. Gol looked at Harm. Get inside. Look for Malak.
The Jiberian nodded, his own concern spiking, and made for the alehouse entrance. Four scars stood watch outside of the doorway, and one of them focused on the huge man appearing before them.
I need to enter, Harm said.
Who are you?
Just a man who stayed here last night. Some valuables were inside.
The iron helm's visor hid the scar's face. It's unfit in there.
I've seen worse.
The scar considered him for a moment.
Wait here.
He went inside. Harm glanced back at the dead man in the street. The street watch was a full complement of about 2 dozen scars, and it seemed to take all of them to hold back the masses of people. A moment later, the scar returned and waved Harm across the threshold. What the Jiberian saw made his jaw hang open in shock. Blood covered the floor of the interior, and the smell smacked him full in the face. More scars filled the room, hauling pallid bodies to the center and lining them up. Harm recognized the faces of 2 serving maids and the barkeep, but not any others. There were 5 warrior types, each displaying the frightening wounds that killed them. 3 scars chopped away at the ruined bar where a brute of a man lay impaled and bent over. A section of the wood was peeled away, revealing how narrow braces beneath the thin wood had speared the dead man through his knees and thighs.
Who are you?
A scar, Kor, asked him pointedly, standing in the middle of the floor, sticky with dying gore. Harm blinked.
My friend and I stayed here last night. We have our things in the upstairs rooms.
You know any of these people? The officer asked.
Harm pointed at the dead serving maids and the barkeep, identifying them by profession only.
I don't know the others.
Where were you this morning?
All of these people were sleeping when my friend and I left the tavern. We went for something to eat.
The Kor dismissed Harm and waved him on up the stairs. The Jiberian walked over the bloody floor, feeling and hearing every gummy step he took. He ascended the stairs to the walkway, and saw that a section of the railway had been smashed as well. Shaking his head, he peered below once more, and the scene looked even more horrific from above. He hurried to his room and saw that the door was open, but that nothing appeared disturbed. His sack of armor remained on the floor. Then he proceeded to Gol and Mullock's room, eyeing the broken railing directly across from the open doorway. The bed was a disheveled tangle, and the room's meager furnishings had been brushed aside as if in a skirmish. There, under the edge of the bed, rested the cloth sack, containing whatever wealth Gol had managed to gather. Scratching at his nose in relief, Harm crossed the floor and picked up the sack, feeling the weight. He checked the contents, frowned grimly at the coin, and tossed the bag over his shoulder. He returned to his own room, gathered his equipment, and with both sacks slung over his shoulders, made his way back down the stairs. The scars allowed him to pass, and Harm stepped out into sunshine that was already uncomfortably hot. Gol waited, looking anxiously at him.
I have it.
The tension left Gol's face in a gush, but then tightened once more.
Where's Malak?
Not inside. Not one of the dead.
No.
Now, whoever it was, murdered everyone in there. There were 5 armored men in there by the looks of it, plus the one in the street.
Mulling over the information, Gol abruptly swung his way to the nearest scar.
Where's the survivor?
The soldier pointed as he gave directions, and Harm and Gol cut a path through the crowd, eagerly straining to see the dead. The traffic beyond thinned out for a short period before the waking city, with its raucous dealings, overwhelmed them. Neither companion had time to be accosted by braying merchants or slow-moving people, and their worry had risen considerably by the time they located the healer's house. Harm rapped his knuckles on the wooden door of a 2-story house with open windows. He couldn't wait and entered, startling a middle-aged man working over a patient on a table. The Jiberian's throat constricted. White bandages, bright with blood, covered the body, while another ringed his head in thick loops, leaving the face with one purpled cheek exposed. Malak's eyes flickered in his direction, and the Cree tried to smile.
Who are you?
The healer demanded, rising from his work with a roll of cloth bandages in his hands, challenging the pair.
We are...
Han checked behind him to ensure Gol was there.
We're his friends.
Late friends,
Muluk rasped with a weak smirk. The healer considered the newcomers for a short time before backing away. Harm and Gol crowded Muluk's bedside, mortified at the damage done to him.
He's not going to die,
the healer informed them.
He thinks,
Muluk corrected. Gol leaned in.
Who did this?
Muluk met his stare, the eye above his bruised cheek bloodshot and sickly yellow.
Don't know.
They didn't take anything, Gold told him.
Thanks to you.
He killed 6 men with nary a stitch of clothing on him, the scars tell me, the healer stated in quiet awe.
Nary a stitch. That's a Cree for you, as bare-assed and brazen as they come.
They brought him to me about mid-morning.
You did all of this?
Gol asked.
Most, as I don't have an assistant these days.
The scars helped for a short while before going off. By that time I had most of the deepest cuts stitched. Need to bandage them now, which was what I was doing when you two came in.
He's not so chipper. The blood loss almost did him in.
Killed them all?
Muluk's voice was strained, his eyes eerily dull.
You did that.
Harm placed a warm hand on top of the Cree's head.
Aye that, right and proper. Where was that ferocity when we fought in the pit? Not to the death, then.
Lucky me, eh? Do what you have to do. Gol instructed the healer. You'll be paid for your efforts. Harm here will aid you for a short time. But later, we'll be off for the pit.
Fighters, are you?
The healer asked.
We are.
This man as well.
Plain to see. A proper beast, he is,
the healer said. Gol's concerned face broke into a smile.
He is. He is indeed. And he's one of ours.
The effort it had taken to speak drained whatever strength Muluk had remaining, and he closed his eyes. Harm crowded in to assist the healer as Gol collapsed on a nearby seat and sighed in relief. He was glad Muluk had survived the attack, but he was even happier that the gold had been untouched. He wiped his brow with a palm and mulled as the men worked on his countrymen. One thought came to the forefront. Who were the 6 men? Worse still, could there be others? The final fight in the streets with the one called Golki was shocking, and one that Kero knew would be with him for a while. When the man on top finally killed the once gladiator, Kero hesitated, wishing Balan back with a few lads with steel. He thought of going into the building himself, but then people arrived, seeping from their dwellings like rats to crumbs. Then the street watch hurried into the area, establishing order. Kero couldn't risk entering the tavern with them around, and stayed in the alleyway until his henchmen arrived behind him with 5 others, all carrying blades. Kero motioned for them to stand behind him and hold their tongues. He stood and watched as a group of scars carried the sole survivor away, while a small number of them entered the alehouse. Kero could only guess at the grisly mess lurking inside, for none of Grishold's other dogs emerged freely or captured by the scars. That meant only one thing. Kero instructed Balan and his lads to stay in the alley before he slunk into the crowd. He overheard that everyone inside had been butchered, even the barkeep and his family. That set the agent's jaw. The dead patrons and owners rendered him speechless with guilt for not fully appreciating the killer's appetite for malice. As gruff as they were, he had never expected them to kill everyone in the tavern. He'd certainly never called for it. The memory of their stupid, grinning faces scalded his memory, and it gladdened his conscience to know they were dead. Except the one who had fought back, the one called Muluk. One man had torn apart Grisholt's pack of killers. He wasn't certain he wanted to return to the man's estate and report the news of their failure, so he deemed it best to send someone else. The idea of entering the tavern took him, but by then, Harm of Jiberia and the cripple had returned. The Jiberian went inside and emerged later with two cloth sacks, the appearance of which made Kero's heart flutter in exasperation. Reluctantly, he returned to where his men waited and gave instructions to Balan to keep an eye on things here. Kero took two men, and together they followed Harm and the cripple to the nearby healer's house. An alley across from the building offered some refuge from the hot morning sun, and there Kero stood with his two spies, attempting diligently to appear at ease, while maintaining watch on the open windows of the house. As the commoners of Sunja meandered through the street, blocking his sight at times, he couldn't help but feel a touch of wonder. One man had killed six trained gladiators single-handedly. Kero didn't have any idea who he was, but he knew a rock when he saw one. Chapter 40 Blood frothed from lipless slits as the healer pulled back cloth bandages and dabbed saywort on the worst wounds. In the beginning, Harm held down the breathing mess that was Mullock, but then the Cree slipped into unconsciousness. "For the best, really," the healer answered the unspoken questions from both Harm and Gaul.
"Satan's ass! What is that shite you're smearing on him?"
Harm asked, screwing up his face.
"What?" the healer asked, clearly unaffected by the odor. "This?"
"Yes, that. Smells like overripe onions, or an unwashed dog."
"I don't smell a thing. Regardless, it's saywort. It'll speed up the healing."
Harm looked upon the jar the healer held with a face filled with disgust.
"What's your name?"
Gaul asked, diverting his attention from the Jiberian.
"Shan,"
the man answered, continuing to apply the ointment.
"We have to go," Gaul explained. "This brute fights in the afternoon, and we've spent most of the morning working with you. Here."
Fumbling for his purse, he counted out 5 gold pieces and handed them over.
"I hope this is enough."
"More than enough."
Shan took the gold, Mullock's blood staining his hands.
"Keep him here until we come get him. If it's longer than 2 or 3 days and that gold runs out, we'll pay you again." "Fair enough?"
"More than fair,"
the healer said, taken aback.
"Do you have any extra bandages? Can we have them for him?"
Gold pointed at Harm's belly.
"Certainly."
The healer gestured toward a wall filled with rolls of cloth.
"Take what you want."
Harm took 3, thanked the healer, and jabbed the bandages into his sack of gear.
"We're leaving,"
Gaul announced. He placed a hand on Mullock's arm, held it briefly, and released him. A pensive Harm rested his hand on the Cree's forehead before nodding sternly at Shan. He then gathered up his sacks of equipment and coin and followed Gaul out the door. Outside, Harm fell into step with the Cree.
"What do you think happened?"
"I don't know,"
Gaul answered, "and I'm not happy about it. We weren't careful enough. Should have had more men with us to guard the gold."
"Or placed it in a bank."
"Or placed it in a bank,"
Gaul gave up.
"Didn't think thieves would be so cutthroat in Sunja."
"More than cutthroat, they were butchers. You didn't see the people inside. They cut up everyone. No one survived except our lad back there."
"Were they after the coin?"
Harm thought about it. All 3 rooms upstairs had their doors booted in.
"I figure they knew. How did they know about it?
Perhaps they saw us?"
"Perhaps. Perhaps they didn't even know about the coin at all. But I'm going to assume they did. And they attacked in the morning. That tells me they had been watching us since last night. Perhaps even longer. And they made plans to strike early in the morning. There were 6 men. We were probably expected to be in the alehouse as well if we didn't rise for breakfast."
"Would have been a different fight,"
Harm scowled. Gaul agreed with a nod. "But you can't dwell on that right now. You have your own fight. Try and keep up." With that, the Cree moved faster toward Sunja's pit. Harm kept up as best he could with the man on crutches. It was past noon when they arrived at the arena, and the domis were just opening their shutters, accepting wagers on the fights of the day. People meandered about the square,
though there weren't many placing wagers. Harm wondered if the morning's action had anything to do with it, or perhaps it was still too early. Gaul swung his way up to the first window and placed his wager, and Harm saw the look of interest on the Domus's face when he heard the amount of coin. Gaul took his marker and placed it inside his purse.
"Now we get below," the Cree informed him.
"Was that all of it?"
Harm asked as they walked towards the Gate of the Sun.
"Most of it.
We've been spending a little more than I wanted, but yes, most of it's just been placed on your hide.
Lightens the load, I must say."
Realizing what rested on his shoulders took the wind out of Harm, and he lagged behind.
"Hurry!"
Gaul shouted at him, prompting the Jiberian to move faster. Within moments, they were below the pit, and descending towards general quarters. The air reeked of fetid latrines, a cloying stench that made Harm wonder if he'd really fought and lived underneath the arena for so many years. When the stairway opened up, torchlight revealed an enormous underground chamber filled with writhing bodies seeming to be stumbling over one another. Gaul stopped at the sight.
"Sitting above. Must be a big day."
"Never imagined."
Harm trailed off, unable to describe what he was seeing and feeling.
"You see this?"
Gaul half turned to him. "And I know if we are successful here this day, we'll rescue several of them from this hell.
Only to place them in another. For some, perhaps."
Gaul became thoughtful as torchlight flickered over his bruised features.
"Perhaps."
Then he continued his descent. They made their way to the matchboard and the intimidating wall of scars, standing at attention, facing outwards. The Medea sat behind his heavy wooden desk, perusing documents and charts of information, making the matches days before they would happen. Gaul studied the mighty board behind the arena official, perhaps the best-lit area of the entire chamber, while Harm stood nearby, searching the shadows, on guard for would-be thieves. He was certain nothing would happen in general quarters, but a part of him wouldn't allow relaxation.
"You're two fights away from your match,"
Gaul informed him.
"Hmm."
Harm looked up at the chart, seeing the matched-up names and not understanding a word. Then Gaul's mouth hung open.
"What is it? Can't you see it?"
Harm didn't want to reveal his illiteracy.
"No. What?" "Pignot fights the day after tomorrow."
"Pignot? That's soon, isn't it?"
"Very soon," a familiar voice commented to one side. Both men turned to see Borchus staring up at the matchboard. "But don't worry, I've sent word back. He'll be here in time. His opponent isn't a house fighter. That much I can tell."
"How do you know?"
Gaul asked. "There's no black circle next to the fellow's name. If it was a house gladiator, there'd be a black circle next to or around the name. Pignot's opponent isn't marked, so chances are he's a free trained. Who it is isn't really important. If I wanted to find out, I would."
"Where were you this morning?"
Gaul asked the shorter but much thicker man.
"About,"
Borchus replied, unconcerned.
"Why?"
"Mullock was attacked and almost killed." The agent's face became drawn.
"Almost killed?"
"He's alive. Alive at a healer's house, but sliced to pieces." The news made Borchus's face crunch up in thought.
"Do you have any enemies?"
he asked, not bothering with offering condolences.
"Besides Courage?"
Harm asked.
"Yes."
"No.
No one."
"How many attackers?"
"Six," Gaul informed him. "They killed everyone in the alehouse. Mullock was the only one who survived."
"Six men?"
Borchus's eyes narrowed.
"Why would they do such a thing?"
"You still have your coin?"
"We do."
"Perhaps they knew about it, then?"
Gaul didn't reply, studying the agent's face.
"I'll look into it,"
Borchus said, mulling. "Concentrate on your fight. You'll have your hands full with him."
"Who?"
Gaul asked before Harm could. The agent frowned.
"You just looked at the matchboard. You can read, can't you?"
"Of course I can read," Gaul snapped back. "I just saw Pignot's name." "His name's Boar," Borchus informed them, leaning in close yet not meeting their gazes,
wary of the other men walking about in the underground chamber.
One of Kerch's many favourites.
Why are you whispering? Harm asked, aware that he was whispering himself.
Just a plump child with his belly hanging out, aren't you?
Borchus smirked, as if adoring a newborn producing words for the first time.
No idea of who you walk amongst down here.
Of who takes note of the matchboard? Why the Maedhr has the number of scars about him?
There are games within games here, fat man, manipulated by forces concealed by shadows. Far and above what you know or think you know, and well beyond the myopic urges of the free-trained. Look about. You think all the men down here are fighters, hm? Did you pick me for one?
You do look it, Gol muttered. Harm didn't comment, not liking Borchus's fat jabs in the least.
And that's why I'm here. I blend in. Much easier to do what I do.
And what's that? Harm blurted, heat in his cheeks.
Calm down, large one. Not the thinking type, are you?
I think fine. Having a right proper thought about you now, in fact.
Wondering how I get the best of you in our verbal exchanges, no doubt.
Harm's face scrunched up in dislike. Wondering if you'll ever grow any taller, you shortened piece of maggot shite.
Borchus stared at the Jiberian for a moment, as if he hadn't heard anything at all.
Well, I'll be on my way, then. I've things to do. Try not to perish out there. Coin has been wagered on your head.
Wait, where are you going? Gold demanded.
The agent became sly.
Who are you to ask about my business, hm?
Concentrate on your bulbous lad there.
That's all you have to do this day. Try not to think too much, however. This place smells bad enough as it is.
With that, Borchus moved away from them and quickly disappeared within the tide of bodies and shadows.
I'm truly beginning to hate that little stump, Harm grumbled.
I can see why.
What does myopic mean?
Gol regarded his companion, his brow knotted up in doubt.
Weren't you educated?
All Jiberians are educated. Somehow Gol doubted that.
Come on. We've got to get you suited up. I'll help.
You think you can?
Gol scowled. Was that a jab?
After you just asked about myopic.
I just said I'd help. Might not be as quick as before, but I'll do what I can for you.
Harm glowered for a moment.
And it means short-sighted.
Oh.
Harm's expression lightened.
That's not so bad.
Gol could have taken the time to explain that it was an insult, but he was becoming much too occupied with preparing Harm for battle. They made their way to the entrance of the White Tunnel, found an open spot nearby, and dumped the contents of Harm's sack onto the floor. In another part of the pit, in the area designated for gladiators from established schools and houses, Dark Kerch paced in his waiting chamber, exclusive to the House of Kerch. 10 fighters filled the confines of the room, and Kerch stared out at the ground level through a brick arch at shoulder height. This day, he opted to watch the fights from here, not wanting the company of half-faced Gastillo or the excitable Nexus. From this window he'd watch, looking upon the sands with his boys. He reached out, pressing the pit of his good arm against the stone, and cupped a fistful of sand. Feeling the grains, he made a fist and withdrew it, kneading the particles out the bottom of his hand where they fell to the floor. Kerch didn't look at the armored frame of Boar, who dominated the center of the chamber. The old owner and once gladiator glared at the falling sand, his face as hard as the stone surrounding them all. None of the others spoke, and in short time, their attention focused on their master. His hand emptied, and Kerch made a show of opening his fist, finger by finger, revealing his bare palm. Dark Kerch's eyes settled on Boar's frame, his leather cuirass dull in the light.
The man you face this day slew Samarhead.
Kerch spoke calmly, but his eyes blazed with checked fury.
Kill him. I don't care how you do it, or how long it takes. Kill him.
Summerhead was a brother, and to have your brother taken down by shite, feasting vermin is an insult that must be not only paid back in blood, but made an example of. Men fear to whisper our names. Show them that they are well and right to have that fear. This day, out there, no mercy, no pity. Kill this Jiberian.
Bor lifted his heavy warhammer, the curling motion making the muscles of his thick arms flex. Spikes the length of fingers decorated his powerful shoulders like monstrous sea urchins. A full caged helm concealed his features, making him appear even more intimidating. Kurds took a breath through his nose, the tension in the room close to bursting. He stepped in close to his pit fighter, so there would be no misunderstanding.
And bring me his crushed head.
The outfitting done, Gol stood back and studied Harm. Conical helm, leather sleeve on his sword arm, metal braces and greaves, square shield on the left arm. It all appeared so very worn, and both Gol and Harm wondered if it would fall off him on the first step or during the fight. The only things new on the Jiberian were the bandages on the wounds sustained in his fight with Mad Vadrian.
"Remember what they taught you," Gol said.
"Who?"
"The trainers."
"Taught me?"
Harm exclaimed softly. "My arms and legs are still stiff from the gurry they had us doing." He chuckled at how concerned the Cree became.
"Fear not, good Gol. I don't. Neither should you. I'll either win or lose, and if I lose, I don't think I'll be alive. I'll do what I can for the house."
"You must."
"I will."
The Media called for Harm, making the Jiberian look up.
"It's time." "Luck to you, Jiberian,"
Gol said in a somber voice. Harm chortled, baring rotten teeth.
"I told you once already."
Gol joined in, saying the words with him.
"The only luck I have is bad."
They shared a smile at that. Almost shyly, Gol stuck out his fist. Harm regarded it for a moment before tapping it with his own, holding his Medemian sword. The contact seemed to lift the Cree's spirits. Then Harm got walking. His huge belly, brazenly on display, quivered with each heavy step. The white tunnel. He marched past the scars, standing at attention, and made his way to the gatekeeper. The old man, bent over and mining at his nose, paused as Harm came into sight. The same gatekeeper as before, Harm saw. Above, the crowds cried out anxiously.
"I remember you," the gatekeeper hissed. "That fat gut of yours. Right saucy, aren't you?"
Harm shook his head. Compared to Borchus, it almost seemed a shame to trade barbs with the gatekeeper, like smashing a child. He kept quiet, gazing up the stairs, which ended in a thick iron portcullis. Black bars stamped blue sky.
"Not so talkative this day, eh?"
The gatekeeper leered with evil mirth.
"Frightened, I suppose."
"Frightened you might die on me right here, and I'll have to pull that lever,"
Harm replied calmly, knowing the keeper wouldn't keep his mouth shut, and silence, at least in his feeble mind, was weakness.
"I still have plenty of life left in me, youngster."
"You must whisper that in the goat's ear, just as you shag it."
The fury on the gatekeeper's face amused Harm, but he supposed it wasn't wise to get the old man's blood going in such a way.
"I hope you die out there this day."
The gatekeeper shook.
"As do I, especially if it keeps me away from the likes of you."
Harm shrugged. With that, the gatekeeper yanked down on the lever, and the man above, just inside the portcullis, stepped back at the clanking of chains and the rusty rattle of the rising gate.
"So quick to get rid of me, my myopic prick?"
Harm asked the old man.
"Get on, you brazen pisser."
The Jiberian did just that, privately delighted that he had learned and made use of a new word. The crowds erupted in an applause that momentarily stunned him when he stepped out into the light. Fists shook and pumped the air. Women screamed at him. He turned around, still numb from the reception, taking in the seats of the arena and noting how full they were. The place positively teemed with people this day. He scuffed at the sands, lowering his helm for a moment and grinding his jaw. Even though he wore sandals, he could feel the hot sands underfoot and around his toes. Across from him, his opponent stepped out of the mouth of the raised portcullis.
"This day," the orator blared, "we had the second blood match between this pit fighter and the house, hunting for his head. Already he has two victories to his name, and he seeks to defy the fates and add yet another. To do this, he must first survive the wrath of the House of Kurge. He is Horm of Siberia!"
More startling applause came, the sound crackling in his ears like violent rains. Horm wasn't sure if he should wave to them all or not. He chose not to, knowing full well how fickle the crowds could be once blood began to fall.
"Across from him is a killer of men. He is Sunjan-born, and no stranger to the games of the bit. There is nothing he enjoys better than punishing his opponents with his heavy hammer, destroying whatever it touches. A stout follower and a master from the House of Kurge. He has taken a vow to avenge the life of his fallen brethren, whose life was taken by the man he now faces. From past matches, I know he will not rest until his hammer has cracked open the Siberian's skull. He is a Boar of Sunja."
Hearing his name, Boar lifted his weapon in salute to the masses and in the direction of the vacant chair of King Jun. The cheers the Sunjan received were as loud as Harm's reception. The warrior's war hammer possessed a thick spike for puncturing heavier armor. Harm figured his bandaged stomach would be a tempting target for his opponent, just like all the ones before him. Boar's armor appeared to be only leather, despite the array of spikes pricking his shoulders. Light. The man would be fast, and he looked unsettlingly powerful.
"Begin!" the orator shouted to the rousing approval of the onlookers.
Boar immediately marched towards Harm, and the Siberian tightened his grip on his Medemian blade. The Sunjan wore a full cage helmet, covering his features entirely, and making him exceptionally menacing.
"You're a right pretty one,"
Harm shouted. Boar did not reply.
"Right serious, too,"
Harm thought. 20 strides away, he felt his bandages tight across his wounds and shifted into a crouch. Boar brought the war hammer up to his chest. The people's cheering quieted a touch as the distance closed. Harm shook his head once more. Boar was a large man bearing down on him. The Siberian gauged where he might put his first strike, the gut, which Boar only seemed to be partially guarding, or a limb or hand. The arms had braces and the legs greaves. He also wore spiked gloves, as Vadrian had. 10 strides.
"I'll kill you,"
Boar growled, loud enough for only Harm to hear. It wasn't as though he hadn't heard such things before.
"Come on, then,"
Harm said. 5 strides. Boar whipped the war hammer up over his head. That he could lift such a murderous hunk of metal was something amazing. Harm cocked his arm. They leaped at each other to the rising delight of the crowd. And a moment later, the pit exploded with sound. Chapter 41. Below the arena, the awesome blast of cheers, partially muted by the stone, made Gol look up. He wasn't the only one, as several others stopped what they were doing to gaze upwards at the murky heights. Only for a moment did they look, however, before turning their attention back to their own preparations. At any moment, Gol expected chunks of stone to fall around him. Then the harsh thunder subsided into nothing, and the Medea was calling out the names of the next fighters to walk the tunnel. That sudden roar rattled Gol's nerves. He'd been taken in by the weapon masters of Kree at the age of 12, and one of the very first lessons he'd learned from them was that of self-reliance.
Yet here he was, relying on another to forward his goals. The fear in his guts taunted him. He couldn't even make the journey to the stands this time around, couldn't bear to watch, choosing to wait for harm either to return through the tunnel on his feet or to be carried out in the meat cart. The thought of having placed almost all of their coin on the head of one Jiberian made his stomach sink. He should have been smarter. He should have placed a smaller wager. If Harm had lost, Gol's plans would be swept away. The moment stretched on as he leaned against the stone lip of the white tunnel's entrance, feeling something like a worried wife wondering if her champion would come home. Then, from around the far corner, a man appeared, walking tall. Gol stopped breathing. He couldn't believe his eyes. As each step brought Harm clearer into view and closer, Gol couldn't see any indication of a wound on his fleshy frame. As far as he could see, there were none. Halfway down the tunnel, Harm reached up with one hand and pulled off his helm, lightening up the white stone with his infectious grin. Gol exhaled and smiled back, feeling both disbelief and a surge of joy.
"Didn't take long at all," Harm informed him.
"Not at all," Gol agreed. "I didn't have any time to go to the stands."
"Surprised?"
The Cree couldn't help but grin. "I am. I'd be lying otherwise."
"Well, come on,"
Harm told him as he bent over with a groan and began stripping off his greaves.
"Let's get this off me and get topside.
We have a marker to cash in."
"He won,"
Gol's mind flashed, almost as stunning as the rain burst of sound he'd heard earlier.
"Some bad news, however."
Gol's face momentarily darkened. "What's that?"
"Bastard Kurge will probably have another man on me in a week's time."
"You killed Bor."
"Aye, that. Didn't you hear?"
"I heard the people, but..."
"The very place shook on its foundation when I killed him."
Harm flipped off one of his greaves and slapped it on the stone floor. He got to work on the other one. Gol thought of the wager and the coin waiting for him. He couldn't stop smiling. "Jiberians," he whispered. In the viewing chamber at ground level, Kurd stiffened as if a spike had been driven through both feet, and he gripped the brickwork of the archway. His men behind him remained deathly quiet, not daring to even breathe in the wake of the stunning loss. The Jiberian had already left the sands, and men dragged Bor from the pit to the open gate where a cart waited. That cart would transport the fighter's dead body from the sands to the waiting fire pit, where all the day's dead would go. Kurge couldn't believe his eyes. The bastard Jiberian had finished Bor faster than Samarhead, if that was possible. The fight replayed itself in his mind. Two pit fighters, closing, closing, Bor with his warhammer overhead, and Harm with his sword and square shield at the ready, the crowds barely heard, and then Bor, swinging, warhammer screaming downwards on a slant. But the Jiberian, lunging, arm punching out and stabbing the taller Bor through the torso, leaving the sword in him as the fat man ducked inside the arc of the descending weapon, dodging it entirely. Bor dropped to his knees a heartbeat later, warhammer already released, head slumping as though he was about to vomit, and then he simply rolled over. Harm righted himself, walked over to his opponent, and worked his blade free, the steel's tip bright with blood. More of it bubbled up in the puncture hole of Bor's leather vest. The people screamed approval while Bor feebly sought to cover the wound with his hands. The Jiberian towered over him, ignoring the crowd, and merely waited for the man to die. It hadn't taken long. Kurge clenched his jaw and fumed. Only faintly aware of servants raking the sands to cover up the blood, of his own men standing behind him. Streams of images raced through his mind, and he made the effort to slow them down, studying the battle in black and white. The Jiberian was fast, deadly fast. That was clear to him now, and he was a counter-striker, waiting until his foe had committed to an attack before launching his own. That fat belly of his was only a ruse that had taken two of his most promising men from Kurge, and even the insane Vadrian, if he wanted to include him. Dark Kurge inwardly cursed himself for not paying greater heed to this pit fighter. It was a mistake he wasn't about to make again. Later that evening, in the house of healer Shan, Gol and Harm sat about Muluk's sleeping form, still confined to the same table they had left him on. Gol sent an untouched Harm out to fetch some food and drink, and he brought back a small feast of fresh bread, a pair of roast garlic ducks, and water, with a bottle of mead as a before-bed drink. He spread the food out on another table, the smell of the meat filling the room, and asked Shan to leave them to their privacy. The healer closed the outer shop, asking the men only to close the door and shutter the windows if they decided to leave. From where he sat, Gol asked if he had any beds and if they could stay there for the night.
I do.
Shan scratched at his head of sandy hair. But wouldn't you be more comfortable in an alehouse or inn? After this morning?
No, Gol replied. I'll pay you for anything you have upstairs.
You do have some, correct?
I do, but therefore patience. If you have anyone come in the night, we'll sleep on the floor.
Well, no need for that.
If it's needed, we'll do it.
A smile appeared on Shan's lined face.
Then the upstairs is yours. I live through that door there. Knock if you need me.
We will, Gol assured him. The Cree grunted and thought for a moment. Do you know of any men who might be hired on as watchmen?
Watchmen?
Guards.
How many?
Gol took a breath and considered the question.
Perhaps two or three. If you know of any. I'll put the word out. I might know of a man.
Good. Shan regarded the sleeping form of Muluk, then the bulky Harm.
I'll leave you all till the morning. Oil lamps are on the shelf when you need them. Cots are upstairs.
Gol nodded his thanks and returned to his meal, Harm on the other side of the table. The Jiberian was already well into his portion of the duck and smacked his lips loudly as he ate.
Go at it quietly, man, Gol told him. You'll wake up Muluk.
I'll save him some. We both will. You think we need a guard? Harm asked.
I'll feel better about it.
Harm leaned in and lowered his voice.
How much did we win?
Gol sighed.
Not quite enough.
No?
No.
What if I throw in what's left of my coin?
Not enough even then. We need several hundred more. We'll have to wager on Pignot.
Ah. Oh. Harm smiled, digging into his food again.
The coin is as good as ours, then. He'll not let you down.
Gol didn't share the same confidence. At about the same time Harm and Gol were holding Muluk down so Shan could work on his wrecked body, Pignot felt as if his arms and legs were about to drop off. Under the hellish glare of both the morning sun and the pair of trainers, he marched about the open sands with a timber beam that must have weighed as much as a grown man across his shoulders. His path, as laid out by Koba, took him the width of the sands, where he would squat once before rising and struggling to the other side, where he would sink into another squat to complete the circuit. Even when Koba did a complete two rounds, seemingly without breaking a sweat, Pignot knew he was going to die. Perhaps somewhere during the second completion. He surprised himself by doing six. There was no way he could rise when he dipped that final time, and dropping the timber from his shoulders was no easy task either. They allowed him a brief moment of rest before once more having him take up a wooden sword and lay into the practice man, drumming out the exact same two-stroke he'd done the day before. Pignot paced himself, but when McClan shouted it was time to eat, the Sunjin's limbs felt rubbery with exhaustion. In the common room, he could barely use his arms to feed himself the soup they gave him. There was more training in the afternoon, weapon practice, and even some sparring with Koba, all while both McClan and Clavellus watched with judging eyes. Pignot knew the old trainer waited for him to surrender, to quit and walk away, every time he gave an order. The moustached bastard wasn't interested in leaden arms and legs or the exhausted pain. Even Koba, who sparred with him, swung his wooden sword and shield with heavy strength, while Pignot could only defend himself and counter-strike with whatever weak reserves he possessed. Ever since yesterday, when Pignot had eyed that young tart, he sensed Koba projecting an air of suppressed hostility towards him, one that the Sunjin wanted to dispel. By mid-afternoon, hopes of that disappeared and were replaced by wondering if he should simply quit. He didn't seem to be learning anything, and the bruises on his arms and legs from Koba's strikes were only getting bigger. At any moment, he expected a shout from Clavellas, commanding the trainers to ease off him, but the taskmaster seemed more interested in his damned silver mug that had to be nailed to his hand, often flashing in the sunlight. Pignot continued sparring with heavy-handed Koba. The Sunjin withdrew into himself, listening to that voice telling him he didn't need such abuse and that he could do quite well on his own. Every time he heard it, a part of him believed it. But then the stubborn part of him saw McClan's wretched face waiting for him to surrender and walk away. The clacking of the wooden blades distracted him only a little from that voice, while his muscles increased their pleading for him to stop. Just stop. McClan stood in the shade of an overhanging roof extending from the ramparts, watching and waiting. The guards patrolling the walls were only half interested in the same man having his guts torn out. Pignot grimaced when Koba slapped his right bicep with the flat of his sword once more.
Stop looking at me and them and focus on him,
McClan bawled. Then to Koba,
seems we might have a right proper daisy in our midst, eh? A right proper daisy.
Koba withdrew back into his fighting stance, waited until Pignot was ready, and attacked again. This time, Pignot parried the blow and became locked up with the trainer, hissing with exertion. Koba frowned at the situation and seemed to wait. Pignot took the moment to push forward, pistoning his legs into the sand. The frown became a snarl, and Koba twisted his upper body, ramming his forearm into Pignot's wrist and slapping him to the ground in a spray of sand.
What was that? McClan bawled. What was that? You right, stupid punce. What did I tell you about leverage? What did I tell you? Don't you ever do that again, or I'll cut your bells off and string them up for wind chimes. On your feet, on your feet!
Pignot exhaled, practically spent. Yet he somehow stood. McClan walked over, glaring hot enough to melt